seated. The third case for oral argument is Citibank Appellant versus South Dakota Department of Revenue, Appellee. Procedurally, this case was originally on our November non-oral docket, and we, in reviewing the briefs, felt it was appropriate for oral argument, and so it got moved to the January term for oral argument purposes. As it was a November case, Justice Koenigskamp was still the justice at that time, and he had planned to participate today but had a little eye issue and was not able to be present. However, he will review the entire oral arguments, and the court will conference at a later date on the case when he is available. With that, I would note appearances of counsel. We have Mr. Thomas Welk and Mr. Jason Sutton and Mr. David Zimbeck, attorneys from Sioux Falls, for the appellant Citibank. And I understand, Mr. Welk, you'll be presenting this morning.
Yes, Your
Honor. All right. And for the Appellee Department of Revenue, we have Mr. Andrew Fergal and Ms. Stacy Hagee, counsel from the Department of Revenue and Peer. With that, Mr. Welk, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor, counsel. As the Chief Justice indicated, this is an appeal regarding a bank franchise tax. It's an appeal under the Administrative Procedures Act. The refund at issue is approximately $30 million. The refund request was denied by the Office of Hearing Examiners and the Circuit Court because of a lack of jurisdiction, because the refund request was filed beyond 3 years when the returns were filed. The evidence below was submitted by written stipulation of the parties and is undisputed. The scope of review is de novo because this appeal only involves questions of law and no deference is given to the decisions made by the Office of Hearing Examiners or the Circuit Court. This case presents a unique set of facts where the court will grapple with what the residents of this state can do in relying upon regulations enacted by a state agency, as Citibank did in this case. This case also presents a factual framework that is a, quote, arcane procedural snare, end quote, referred to in the Dakota Truck Underwriters case that allows the court to consider the applicability of the doctrine of equitable tolling, which allows the court to look at the jurisdictional arguments and raised by the department and see if the circumstances are inequitable to deny the relief sought. The department agrees that if the refund is considered to be timely by this court, that the amount of the refund is undisputed as to the calculation. This is not a case where the court has to get involved in arithmetic and putting together what the amount of the money is. This case does present a very unique factual framework under our taxation laws in South Dakota. This involves the bank franchise tax, and it's a tax that's based upon federal income tax. It is unlike all other taxes as how the tax is measured. None of the rest of our taxes that I'm aware of are in any way measured by federal income tax. So the measurement is key in this as compared to the sales tax, use taxes, and other cases in which this court has been involved. SDCL 10-43-10.1 imposes on a tax on Citibank, a financial institution, measured by what Citibank pays for its federal income tax, subject to some adjustments. The Secretary of Revenue is authorized under 10-43-42.1 to promulgate rules which, among other issues, address the procedure for the filing and the payment of this particular tax. Moreover, SDCL 10-43-55 specifically recognizes the Secretary's authority and requires the Secretary to refund any excess tax payments pursuant to procedures established under 126 by the enactment of rules. And in this case, we are dealing with two particular rules enacted by the Secretary. And without giving all the long citations that are in the brief, I'm going to call them 05 and 06. And 05 is the regulation of the department that requires that a supplementary return be made if there is an adjustment by the U.S. government in an audit or otherwise. And so it requires the taxpayer, in this case Citibank, to file, if its federal income tax is adjusted by the United States government, and to file a supplemental return within 60 days and then pay the tax.
Mr. Welf, we've said on numerous cases that administrative rules cannot exceed the statutory authority. Now, you're citing these rules. Do you have any problem with the scope of these rules?
Your Honor, do you mean the scope as to the authority, or what do you mean?
Yes, do they exceed the statutory authority of the Department of Revenue, or are you simply using them as a basis for your argument?
I know what they're going to argue is that they can be read together, but with the statute, that they can be read together, but it's impractical in this case, Your Honor, because to extend that argument that the regulations don't help look at the prism of how these will be worked, they will be reviewed, would allow the court to not look at how the tax is going to be calculated. And it's a very important point. If this is beyond, if these regulations get back to the measurement of the tax has to be accurate, and the tax is based upon the federal income tax. These regulations, were delegated to the Secretary to allow refunds and to allow the payment of tax consistent with the measurement of tax, that is, as the federal income tax as may be adjusted by the federal government. This is totally different than any other type of tax, Your Honor. I think you have to look at the tax structure and framework itself together, because by the delegation, the legislature has allowed the Secretary to use the measurement of tax as the federal income tax, and that has to be accurate. And you do that by allowing the federal income tax to be determined if there's an audit, subject to whatever happens in the audit, up or down. And as you will talk about the facts, that's what's happened to Citibank in this case. So 05 is the one that requires Citibank an adjustment to increase income to pay more tax. 06 is permissive and says if the federal government adjusts your income down, you may file a supplementary return. The court has been clear in its settled law that the department is bound by its regulations. And we believe that the regulations allow Citibank to do and to recover the money it's done in this case. In this situation, Citibank is in a catch-22. It can't file a request for refund under the regulations until the federal government adjusts its federal income tax.
Why is that? You say they can't file it until the federal government completes its work? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying, Your Honor, because...
Why is that?
Look at the regulation. The language of the regulation in 06 says specifically, Your Honor, because of an audit or adjustment, the taxpayer may file a supplementary return.
It says or otherwise, and so once you knew you were requesting the audit, couldn't you have put them on notice?
No, because you don't know what's going to happen in the audit. And as you saw in this case, Your Honor, the requests were made by the IRS to extend this, not by Citibank. As commonly in big corporations, the IRS comes in big organizations and says, you need a tolling agreement. This took 10 to 12 years.
What do those words or otherwise mean then? In your view,
I don't know what they mean. As applied to this case, we don't need to answer that because in this case, Your Honor, we did what the regulation said. We filed a supplementary return 60 days after the federal government adjusted the income down for Citibank. We don't need to answer that question today because we did what the regulation said we could do. And in 2007, we did what the regulation required us to do, and that is we paid $4.3 million for taxes beyond 3 years, and the state accepted it, audited it, and returned. So in that instance, they accepted $4.3 million beyond the 3 years, and Citibank complied with 05 and did what any taxpayer should do, and that's follow the regulation of what happened here.
Is the three-year limitation in statute or administrative rule?
The 3 years is a statute, Your Honor, under 1059-19, which the department is arguing. But we argue, Your Honor, because of the delegation under the two statutes, that the Secretary was authorized to create a procedure to file a refund, or pay tax. This works both ways.
In essence, you're extending the 3 years by an administrative rule when the 3 years is statutory. I don't see how you can get there.
The way you get there is you can't pay the tax accurately what the code requires until the adjustments are made. That's the bottom line, Chief Justice.
It sounds to me like your argument's with the legislature upstairs instead of us. If it says 3 years, isn't it 3 years?
Not if the tax is measured by federal income tax. That is why this is different than any other case, because of the measurement of the tax. Because it's based on federal income tax. It's not based upon receipts. And so you can't properly collect and calculate the tax till the federal income tax is determined. And in the event, in this particular case, it was years later.
All right.
So
well,
that's
Mr.
our argument.
Well, if the tax was determined and whatever tax was due was paid previously, you're asking to file an amended return, correctly? Correct?
Yes, and we overpaid based upon the final adjustment for the federal government.
All right. Under your analysis, you're saying 1059-19 doesn't apply at all on statute of limitations. Under your analysis, is there any statute of limitations?
The answer would be under, in certain instances there would be, in certain instances there would not be. You have to pay the tax within 60 days. So let's take it from both sides, Chief Justice, or Justice Severson. 60 days to pay, all right? So this works for the government as well as the taxpayer. You're outside the three-year period. The regulation says pay. So is that going to be enforced, which happened? In this case, we say we did it. It was afterward, and I believe, as our brief said, that it will extend it beyond the 3 years, and I believe because what you're going to be left with, because there is not a statute that addresses this, you're probably left with a latches argument, did you wait too long? But we don't need to address that in this case. And the reason we don't have to address it is that Citibank made its request for refund within 60 days of the final adjustment by the IRS. It doesn't say 60 days in 06. It says 60 days in 05. It says may file. Citibank filed within 60 days. So in this case, we don't need to have to deal with that instance. There's another interesting statute here that the court has never addressed that has a unique background. And that's 1059-27.
Just a minute. Let me interrupt you.
I'm sorry, Justice.
Before you go to another subject or another statute, you know, 06 doesn't have a statute of limitations in it. So is your argument today really equitable tolling, or are you actually arguing that the regulation somehow sets a statute of limitations?
It's both. There are two reasons to get to that result. We say because this legislature authorized and delegated the secretary to provide for the process of filing refunds and also to how to pay the tax, the secretary had regulations, and that was a permissive use by the legislature to go ahead to the secretary. And in these particular instances, with a measurement of the tax being on federal government, that's one argument. The other one is the equitable tolling argument.
So your argument... Your legal argument is then that this regulation essentially eliminates any statute of limitations in the case where there's a federal government audit and it's outside the three-year period.
Yes. As to the payment of bank franchise tax,
yeah. Okay.
A very unique tax under our tax scheme.
So we would have to hold that an administrative regulation eliminates the three-year statute of limitations that's in the statute.
I think you can rule that because the tax wasn't calculated until, because it's required by the federal income tax to be determined, that's a particular tax that is allowed to be calculated after the 3 years because of the unique measurement of the tax being on federal income tax. And then the secretary agreed with that. I think that's where you have to get on that before we get to equitable tolling.
But the bottom line is we have to say there is no statute of limitations if you get into this situation where the federal government audits.
Under this particular set of facts, that's correct. Not in everything, but in this one, it's very unique. But in this particular tax and the way it's measured, that's the end result.
Okay.
All right? Except we'll talk about equitable tolling when we get to that, which the court all knows. But I wanted to talk about 1059-27. It hasn't ever been addressed that I'm aware of by the court. And no one disputed below what my belief, the reason for that statute is. It's a statute that allows a taxpayer to rely on written advice as to the taxability of transactions. And that's happened because there's been taxpayers in South Dakota who call up and they get something in the Department of Revenue. They rely on an oral conversation. Years later, there's an audit, and it wasn't what the person on the telephone said. So the legislature passed this statute. So it would protect taxpayers to say, if you've got written advice as to from the department by the taxability, then you may rely on it, and the department's got to rely on it. If that is what the legislature said in 1059-27, doesn't that mean that a regulation that allows a taxpayer to even rely on something more than an email or a writing? Isn't this manifestation of the intent of the legislature to protect our taxpayers from changes of positions in the Department of Revenue? And when you have a regulation, which we know has the full force effect of law, isn't that even more than an email message? So I ask the court to consider that statute as you review the case. How does that apply here? I'm not saying that there was a written email to Citibank. I'm saying that they relied on regulations. And if you can rely on an email or a writing, shouldn't you be able to allow to rely on regulations? And I make that.
Well, how hard was it for Citibank to send a letter to the Department of Revenue specifically saying, Department, these are the facts. What's your opinion?
Because they relied on the regulations. Most taxpayers, Your Honor, would rely on the regulations. We require our taxpayers to rely on regulations. That's the way the system works. If you have a regulation that's clear, you read it and you do it. I mean, you don't need to send a letter if it's a clear regulation as to what to do. And isn't that even more force and effect than an email message? And that's my point in the statute as you look through this. The material facts aren't disputed. We've already talked about a number of things about the tax itself. What we're dealing with here for the refund years were the years 99 through 2002, based on the amounts reported. The IRS examined the federal returns, and there was a series of extensions of tolling agreements requested by the IRS, and they didn't finally adjust those years until June 30th of 2012.
Was that examination at IRS's request, or did Citibank ask the IRS? Didn't Citibank change some of their accounting practices, and that's what started the whole ball rolling as far as...
My understanding, I'm not involved in these, Your Honor, is that in these mega corporations, this is a typical, when the Citibanks, the J.P. Morgans, the big corporations of the world, IRS has people on their site reviewing returns for years because they're large, complex. And so what Citibank and other large corporations are placed with is the statute, the 3 years coming up, here's a tolling agreement signed. And so they accede to the tolling requests of the IRS. That's what happened. But there's a case here that's not in the briefs.
Has this ever occurred before where it sounds like Citibank is annually audited by the IRS? Has it ever occurred with the Department of Revenue what you're arguing about today, or is this the first time?
No, I'm not aware of this decision being this and ever being in the Department of Revenue's position regarding this matter. I'm not aware of it, Your Honor. I don't know all the cases. I'm not omniscient, but
no,
I don't.
I mean, as a Citibank, it sounds like they get audited by the IRS about every year.
They do, and that's why they file returns, their audits, and this is why it takes years, because it's not Citibank, it's the IRS taking years. But there's a case here that's not in the briefs that I want to point out that it's a complex accounting problem. You don't need to delve in it because of the stipulation that's here. But basically the stipulation says that Citibank got taxed twice on the same income. You don't have to figure out if you want the accounting explanation. I can give it to you, but it's stipulated it's that way. But there was a decision pending during this long audit that kind of puts it in perspective that's not in the briefs. And that's the Capital One decision from the Fourth Circuit.
Well, and that's then you have to provide, Shirley, how many copies is that?
We own 10
copies under our rules if it's not cited in the briefs.
We will do that, Your Honor. And it's the Capital One decision that addressed this whole change of accounting system. It's the reason why they've settled the IRS and adjusted it. It isn't important for you to understand it, but it was the precipitating event that caused the audit to close, all right? You don't need to be accountants to understand all this, but that was part of it. it's not undisputed that it takes years to audit large corporations. And why this reduction took place was a change in accounting that happened, and Citibank essentially paid twice on income than in 1 year on 2 years of income. And if you want to get into that, we can talk about it. A couple of things that are important for the record here. Citibank filed its request in March of 2012, but in 2007 they filed a return where their income was increased, and this is the $4.3 million that was paid for tax years 93 to 98. So it was clearly outside the 3 years. They complied with the statute and paid $4.3 million. They looked at it, state took the money, never said a word. All right, now when it's time to pay, we have a different situation.
But isn't there a reason for that? I mean, when you talk about the state planning, their fiscal planning, and, you know, getting a $30 million hit, isn't there a reason to have that statute of limitations and have some restrictions?
In this case, on this tax, that's illusionary. And it's illusionary because did they plan for the $4.3 million increase? No one really knows that. And the Department of Revenue, they don't go and challenge the IRS on federal income tax. They get it, they make a few adjustments, and you pay it. So if this argument by the state, it's illusionary because no one knows what's going to happen inside the audit, and these audits are clearly, in the large situations, beyond 3 years.
Your time has expired, Mr. Welk.
Thank you.
Mr. Fergal, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Andrew Fergal, and I represent the state of South Dakota and the Department of Revenue in this matter. In the Ernst & Young versus South Dakota Department of Revenue and Regulation case, this court said, the United States Supreme Court has recognized and this court has embraced the need to protect the government's strong interest in financial stability and the state's ability to engage in sound fiscal planning as the strong underlying justification for limitation periods for tax refunds. The legislature of the state of South Dakota has done just that by implementing and enacting SDCL 10-59-1, 1059-17, and 1059-19.
Under the stipulated facts of this case, or I guess they're not contested, is there any way Citibank could have got this refund? What did they do wrong?
What they did wrong is they did nothing, Chief Justice Gilbertson. Citibank comes here today and argues there's no way they could have complied with the rule and the statute of limitations. However, if you look at the record, you will see that in 2012, they filed a refund for 2008 tax year where they did file a return when the federal audit had not been yet complete. That's in the record, I believe, on, let me grab the pages for you. I think if you look at the record from page 19 to 33, you'll see that Citibank did in fact file an amended return for the 2008 bank franchise tax year, and that is currently before the Department of Revenue and pending. So there is a way to do it, and they have demonstrated themselves that there is a way to do it. When it comes down to the 1999 to 2002 tax year, they also could have done the same thing. Citibank,
you mean the rule doesn't require that you wait for the completed audit before you notify the Department of Revenue that there might be something going on with the decrease?
Absolutely not, Justice Wilbur. The rule, like you indicated earlier when Mr. Welk was up here, says or otherwise. In this instance, Citibank knew that it had changed its accounting method in 2002 for tax year 2001. They knew that they were asking the IRS to accept a deferred method for accounting for interchange fees at that time, and that they would be duplicating income on their 2001 return that they had already paid tax on. They knew at that time they were going to ask the IRS to change their accounting method. Before, they were using the immediate recognition method. So they knew that they were going to do this before the statute of limitations had run. At that time, they could have filed a supplementary return with the department showing what they would be due in a refund if the IRS required them to maintain the status quo and use the immediate recognition method, because remember, they had duplicated income. And on the other hand, what the refund would be if the IRS allowed them to use the deferred recognition method. And then the state would have been on notice because they would have had the supplementary returns. And at a minimum, the state could have mitigated any cost to the state. They could have fiscally planned. They could have budgeted. We could have netted out the difference between what would happen for a refund using the immediate recognition method and, on the other hand, the deferred recognition method, paid the refund, and then taken any liability that the state would have had off the books.
So if the IRS had sent a letter, Citibank had sent a letter to the Department of Revenue saying, we're audited, we're going to get a refund, but we're not sure it's going to be one of two figures, that's enough to toll the statute of limitations?
Chief Justice, I don't think that just sending a letter would be enough to toll the statute of limitations. I think they still need to look at the rule in 06 and file the supplementary return that would show the department what the effect would be of their election there. But yes, then they would have met the rule and they would have complied with the statute of limitations, because there it says that taxpayers may request refunds for allegedly overpaid tax, interest, or penalty, and they would have complied with the rule. And if we would have looked at those returns and denied any portion of what they were requesting, they would have been entitled to due process hearings, A, before the Office of Hearing Examiners, and then could have appealed all the way up to this court.
How did they file a supplemental return, quote unquote, when the audit hasn't been closed by the IRS? They don't have a final return from the IRS.
Justice Zinter, that would be true. They wouldn't have a final return from the IRS, but they would have complied with the statute of limitations by submitting the supplemental return. That's all that's required.
What would the return, 06 says, may file a supplemental return. What would this return look like if you don't have your return from the IRS that says what the dollar figure is?
Well, again, Justice Zinter, as it pertains to this particular instance, which is on appeal here, Citibank knew that it had duplicated income because they wanted to change their accounting method from the immediate recognition method for interchange fees to the deferred recognition method for interchange fees. So at that point where they know that they're going to change their accounting method, they know that on the one hand, using the immediate recognition method, that there's going to be a request for refund in amount certain. It's just a math problem and filling out the return. They can figure out what their returns will look like both at the federal level and at the state level, and in the same manner they can do that if the IRS would have allowed them to use the deferred recognition method.
All right. Mr. Fergal, you're assuming that they had some idea of what the tax would be and that this issue would come up, but this is 2001 taxes, presumably, I'm assuming, paid in roughly 2002. With the three-year statute of limitations, after 2005, if there was an audit, if there was a change that went back, are you saying the statute would run? There's no way they can go back at all?
If there was some instance where, unbeknownst to them, they would be getting some adjustment by the IRS, that's true. And that is allowed. McKesson, the McKesson case explicitly says, and I want to go find it here in my notes, The United States Supreme Court in McKesson Court versus Division of Alcoholic Beverages and Tobacco specifically recognized the enforcement of relatively short statute of limitations applicable to refund actions as a procedural measure states may use to protect the state's fiscal security when weighed against the obligation to provide meaningful relief for their unconstitutional taxation. And that even has to do with the non-constitutional taxation. Here, we're not talking about an unconstitutional tax. Neither Citibank has not argued that the bank franchise tax is unconstitutional whatsoever. So it is allowed for states to enforce those short periods of limitation to basically protect the state's treasury. And in this instance, that's important because here we're talking about refunding close to $30 million and potential interest on the refund of close to $24.5 million. In addition, if the court buys their argument that somehow the rule trumps the statute, the state would be subject to an unknown but potentially very large franchise tax refund liability, because there could be numerous instances where financial institutions did not file supplementary returns for bank franchise tax refunds because they reviewed 1059-19 and understood they were outside the limitation period prescribed therein.
So you're saying, in essence, that the Citibank's argument nullifies the three-year statute of limitations?
Absolutely. That's what they're arguing for here. They're arguing for agency nullification of a legislative edict, and that's simply, I just don't see how that can work in our system. Statutes control rules. Rules administer statutes that they implement. And in this instance, the 06 rule specifically implements SDCL 10-59-19. And if you go look at the LRC website and the published rule, you'll see that it clearly states that it is implementing 10-59-19, along with several other statutes. This court has said that an administrative rule promulgated pursuant to a delegation of legislative power must be interpreted within the scope of the statute that it purports to implement, and in no way expand upon the statute. Therefore, the rule must be reinterpreted within the confines of the three-year statute of limitations. Citibank's contention that the administrative rule takes precedence over the limitation period in SDCL 10-59-19 must be rejected because it is a fundamental principle of administrative rule law that if an administrative rule conflicts with an unambiguous statute or clear expression of legislative intent, the rule is invalid. And this court has said several times, and most recently in the Paul Nelson Farm case, that rules adopted in contravention of statutes are invalid. Citibank also argues in its brief that the rules of statutory construction that states specific statutes and regulations take precedence over general statutes and regulations apply in this case. And they contend that the rule is specific to bank franchise tax, while SDCL 10-59-19 is a general rule covering multiple types of taxes, and therefore the rule controls over the statute. Here, the court doesn't even need to resort to statutory construction, because the language in 10-59-19 and does not conflict with the rule or any of the other statutes that's implemented by the rule. They can all be read to work in harmony. Citibank also overgeneralizes the rule of statutory construction because, as it applies here, because Citibank cited authority only states that specific statutes prevail over general statutes, but this case involves an administrative rule and one of the statutes it implements.
I want to go back to 06 again for one moment. And let me try to pin you down on what exactly, which part of the regulation you're relying on. This authorizes the supplemental return, and it says because of an audit and adjustment by the United States or otherwise. Which case is it? Which case is this case? Is this case one because of an audit and adjustment, or is it an otherwise case?
This is an otherwise case.
Okay, so explain that.
Well, in order to meet the timing of the administrative rule, they knew that they were going to duplicate income. So once they knew that, they had the ability to file supplementary returns. And again, here the rule is going to control the statute. 10-59-19 controls. And that clearly says that taxpayers may file a request for refund for allegedly overpaid taxes. And so what they need to do, they go to the rule that says how do you request the refund? You do that by filing the supplementary return. The rule does not say that upon filing you shall be refunded the money. The state still has the ability to do its due diligence and then look at the rule, the statute that the rule implements, and see that, okay, yes, they're timely. So, A, they'll get paid if all their math is right, if we don't disagree on something. If the state then wants to say that you're wrong about something, they'll do a denial, either partial and full, and then the parties will have their chance at due process. But here, the rule simply tells the taxpayer how to go about requesting a refund. It doesn't say that you shall get the refund once you make the request. The when you have to file is controlled by a very unambiguous statute adopted by the legislature, and that's 1059-19. I'd like to touch a little bit on Citibank's equitable tolling argument here. First and foremost, I don't believe that the court here needs to even look at equitable tolling because of the language in SDCL 10-59-17. There, the legislature has specifically said that no court has jurisdiction of suit to recover such taxes, penalty, or interest unless the taxpayer seeking the recovery of the tax complies with the provisions of this chapter. And that acts as a prohibition by the legislature for applying the doctrine of equitable tolling to tax refund cases for the taxes listed in 10-59-1. Also, Citibank did not raise the issue of equitable tolling before the Office of Hearing Examiners, and therefore the issue should be waived. I would also point out that the department did not do anything to prevent Citibank from timely filing its claim. The department did not mislead or otherwise prevent Citibank from filing timely refund claims. Further, this court generally requires strict compliance with statutes of limitation, and the doctrine of equitable tolling is not typically applied, especially in tax cases. If this court does decide to consider Citibank's equitable tolling argument, we believe that the doctrine is inapplicable because Citibank failed to give the Department of Revenue timely notice about the fact that it had changed its accounting methods, that it had duplicated income in its tax return filings, and that due to that duplication of income in certain years, they would be requesting a very large refund. In addition, the department is prejudiced to the extent it now would be faced with a very large refund that may include millions and millions of dollars of interest that it has been unable to fiscally plan for or budget for. And Citibank's failure to notify the department about its change in accounting and duplication of income was unreasonable in light of the fact it made the changes in accounting on its own volition and was dealing with the IRS concerning the change since at least 2002, which was before the statute of limitations in 10-59-19 would take effect.
When does the interest start accruing from the date of when they file for the amended return, or before
60
that?
Days after they pay the tax pursuant to 1043-55.
So way back to the original time they paid the tax.
Close to it, yes, Chief.
So you're saying that delay period from when they paid the tax to when they file for the refund prejudices the department.
Absolutely. I see my time is just about up, so I'll try to wrap this up quickly. Except for the amount of money involved, the department does not see this as an extraordinary case. This court has already produced a roadmap for deciding this case in its decision in the 2004 Ernst & Young case. Citibank has attempted to distinguish Ernst & Young in its brief on the facts from this case. However, like the Office of Hearing Examiners and the Circuit Court, the department's view is that Ernst & Young is directly on point and controlling. If Citibank views the three-year statute of limitations for requesting refunds for bank franchise taxes as not good policy, Citibank needs to seek a remedy with the legislature working up one floor up from here, not with this court. Therefore, the department respectfully requests this court to affirm the Office of Hearing Examiner's grant of the department's motion to dismiss. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fergal. Mr. Welk, you have 10 minutes rebuttal, sir.
Thank you. Why did they keep the $4.3 million that was outside the 3 years of statute of limitations? If that's outside, isn't Citibank entitled to its money back plus interest?
What's a different regulation?
It's the same principle, Justice Zinner. It was 3 years outside the statute of limitations. The years that they paid for in 2007 were way beyond the 3 years. And they did what they were supposed to do. They paid it. So if the logical extension of their argument is 3 years and we're done, then they shouldn't have kept the money. And we're entitled the money back plus interest. Does it work one way? Citibank gets screwed both ways? We paid $4.3 million and we don't get that back because it's outside the 3 years? But now when we want the money back?
That's hypothetical unless a claim has been made. Has a claim been made for that? That case isn't in front of us.
The equity of the situation is squarely before you under the doctrine of equitable tolling, Your Honor. That fact is directly before you as to what the circumstances that Citibank expended. Yes, is there a claim? No. But the fact of itself, that the payment was there. And one of the things that Mr. Fergal didn't tell you about, one of the things that happened between the Office of Hearing Examiners and Circuit Court is that the argument said you should be making this protective filing. So we filed one in 2012 for 2008 that was timely. And what did we get back from the Department of Revenue, which is in the record, appended to our brief? Wait till the audit's done and come back. That's. And the reason that's so, it's very naive of the department to say put something on notice. I mean, these are corporations whose returns involve very complex transactions. There are offsets up, down, all around. And the naive approach is we're requesting this. Well, how many people can say they requested the IRS to do this and they didn't do it and they offset it? So they don't know. And that's why the regulations key off of the adjustment from the federal income tax return. Because at that point, all these issues that could go in or out, you're going to have them settled. The Capital One case, which I'll send to you, came down in 11 and the IRS said, finally, they were not accepting the recognition of what Citibank wanted. The Capital One case is a significant case in this industry, and that's when the IRS said, okay, the Fourth Circuit ruled, that's fine. Doesn't really affect that, but it tells you the background of the inequity of what's going on here. And
well, one question. You're saying in South Dakota the keying of the tax off of federal income tax is unique. In many states, that's not unique because of the state income tax keying off of the federal income tax. Are there statute of limitation cases in those states that deal with the same principle?
Your Honor, and there's a long footnote in the brief that talks about various state statutes that allow these types of circumstances in other cases in other states, and they're all, I don't need to have you, I would just direct you to that footnote and list them all, where legislatures have seen this and tried to address the inequities here. The logical extension of their argument is that basically after 3 years.
Going back, doesn't that go back to the fact then that that's up to the legislature to address that?
You can say that. Of course, you can say anything, Your Honor. But under a doctrine of equitable tolling, which allows the court to look at a jurisdictional issue and say, this is inequitable under the circumstances. And you've said that under Dakota Underwriters. You said it again in AGC recently where you said it didn't apply. But it is a way for the court to look at the circumstances here of saying, look, they did what they're supposed to do. They followed the regulations. And in this case, because of the inequity, this arcane procedural snare, they acted in good faith. To suggest, as the department's position is, that you just file a return and we requested a refund is ludicrous in a large corporation. You don't know what's going to happen, and the IRS is extending and fighting and all that, and you truly don't know till the end of the adjustment. And that's why these regulations make sense that you file it once the final adjustment is made, because that's how the tax is measured. There's no prejudice in this instance, except for the amount of money that we're talking about. There is no prejudice of evidence. The facts are undisputed. The department's not saying that the math is wrong. They're not saying they needed any records or anything to dispute this. The amount of money is large. Yes, but how did they know what was going to happen? Just because it might create a large sum of money does not create prejudice. That's not the logic. How was the department prejudiced? It wasn't prejudiced because they don't do anything till they get the return anyway. And there are no records that they need. They got they get the tax return, they look at it, they make their adjustments, and you pay the tax up or down. So the prejudice is from the money itself. All right? And that's what we're talking about. It isn't prejudice to their position. And if you look at, I'm not going to get in and tell the state or anybody else what their financial circumstances are, but they don't, no one can plan for these instances. Just like the $4.3 million that was paid in 2007. That's the upside. So what you would have to say is any IRS audit, we don't care whether it's done. The logical conclusion is we don't care what's done after 3 years, you're done. Whether it's in process or it's not in process, you know, 3 years, it's over with. In these large corporations, you're never going to know until you're done. It's easier maybe in a smaller entity, but that's not the way this has worked. And Citibank did and followed it consistently. They followed it in 07 when they paid the $4.3 million. They followed it when they filed the supplementary return within 60 days. They even tried the 08, which we tried to show you. That was part of the equitable tolling evidence to show, look, what can you do? This protective filing makes no sense. And if these things don't really make the regulations themselves, why have them? If it's a 3-year, you don't need them, why have them if that's the way it's supposed to work? Aren't they superfluous? There is a purpose, and it's because the tax is measured by the federal income tax.
What about the 2012 filing? What's your view of the significance of that?
The significance is to belie their argument to make a protective filing. Because we did. We just said, here's a protective filing. And they said, wait till the tax return is done.
But your claim is preserved on that one, then.
Pardon?
Your claim for a refund is preserved on that, isn't it?
It's preserved.
Because you made the protective.
We made a protective filing, but it can't be determined.
But you'll get your refund eventually when the IRS is done.
So is it every? So this position would be every year you would file a protective filing under audit with the IRS, not knowing what it is. Is that what's going to have to be required? Every year you're going to have to file something and say, hey, look, without knowing what the final audit, this is not as simple as looking at ABC and here's your income. These are multinational corporations with transactions that are going to affect the entire return. They're not going to know, Your Honor. They're not going to know what's going to happen. This is one issue, that recognition. There are a multiplicity of issues in all these audits. You're never going to know the answer to that.
But in this case, if I understand the record right, please help me on this. The whole audit with the IRS started before the 3-year statute ran.
Yes.
So you could have done what you did in 2012.
You don't know what's going to happen. It's not as simple as saying we've changed the accounting system and it's going to be this way. You don't know that.
But you know when you're getting audited.
You know when you're getting audited. So Is that going to be a requirement then? Where is that that you're supposed to notify them? They relied on the regulation, Your Honor, that says it's adjusted, when adjusted by the U.S. government. That's why you let this go and run its course. Is the department going to go in and tell the IRS, you know, what it should do? No, of course it's not. It's going to wait until the IRS runs its course and tells the final tax return. And Your Honor.
Well, one last thing before we run out of time. What about our Dakota truck underwriters case? You know, we seem to have said that we're not going to apply equitable tolling at all in jurisdiction cases. And here, the statute attempts to say this is jurisdictional.
The way I may be misreading the case, Your Honor, the way I read it is the doctrine of equitable tolling permits the court, in equitable circumstances, to look at the jurisdiction and to permit what has occurred. That's what I view. Maybe I'm mistaken, but that's what I review Dakota underwriters to say, is that if the court truly believes that you're caught what they were in Dakota underwriting, with the change of the statutes, it was this arcane snare, that the court has the ability under the doctrine of equitable tolling to look at all of the facts and then to not say that the jurisdiction is a bar. And so that's why it's required for us to say, okay, look, we get it. We gave it within 60 days. The prejudice, the department has none. They've stipulated to it. And we were diligent. We paid when we were supposed to pay. We filed. We've done everything we're supposed to do. So we think on the facts, the court, in its discretion, obviously this is what the court can determine, what it wants to do as far as equitable tolling. For that, Your Honor, thank you. I know my time is up. Thank you, members of the court and counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Walt. The court will be in recess.